Yes, we are fighting to be free. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James. This is, of course, the voice of Christian Israel on Eurofolk Radio, and I certainly enjoyed David James' analysis of John Lennon's Imagine. That's the name. But I'd like to rework the lyrics just a little bit. Imagine there's no jury. It's easy if you try. No Jewish wars to die for. Okay. All right. So I gotta re-record that song, brother.
Yeah, and no need to entangle a lie.
Yeah, right. And so I'm gonna quickly share. We're gonna talk about the Council on Foreign Relations. And I remember one of our discussions, I put this in the chat room right away too, folks. One of our discussions previously, you had mentioned that the CFR was actually prominent in the unhinging of the white South African state. Maybe you could tell us about that before we read this article. I just put the link in the chat room at Eurofolk Radio.
Good afternoon, Pastor, and also good afternoon to our listeners. Yes, Pastor, it's actually a sad state. I'm going to mention quite a number of things out of own experience, and this is encompasses quite a number of years. But I think I already told you that in 1976-77, I actually went through theology training. I studied to become a pastor for 2 years. And was, of course, all these subjects like Greek and Hebrew, which were my main subjects, and then also church history and dogmatics and ethics and poimenics and all the different texts you can think of. And one of the things that while I was at the theology college, you would most probably call it a seminary, the students that were there were invited to an event which was held at, and I'm going to mention the particular the location where it was. I know it was in my second year, which meant it was in 1977, and it was at the Full Gospel Church in Ondekkers Road in Roodepoort, for those from South Africa listening. And the event was orchestrated for the benefit of the people who were free-thinking at the time, and so-calledly the leaders of the communities. And, of course, with ministers being in training, it would be very appropriate and important for these students to also attend an event like that, where what I believe to be, and I can recall to be, the chief of the South African police at the time had invited an American guy who was a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. He was working under Jimmy Carter at the time.
Okay.
And being also of Baptist background, he came to realize that what they were in fact planning in the 60s and early 70s to orchestrate the downfall of white South Africa, he came to realize this. There were a number of things that he mentioned. He said that during his time as being part of the Council of Foreign Relations, it was as if they had done this without feeling and really without thinking, because they saw this white government in South Africa as an apartheid-driven, something similar to Nazism, and they were had their thinking caps on as to how they could actually bring this country down. And that was, in my own words, basically what he stated. And he said that they had planned a five-year plan. And the first five-year plan started with a bomb that was exploded on Johannesburg Station, I think, if I can recall, on the 6th of June, which is the 6th month of 1961. And so you have the 666 somewhere incorporated into this date that this event took place. He explained as to how it was orchestrated and all the planning, the pre-planning that went into it, and the 5 years during which there were attacks on farms and landmines placed on farm roads and various bombs in shopping centers, etc., for the purpose of destabilizing this, what they called the white man's belief in their government system. And that was to cause antagonism against the apartheid government. He said he could actually define the begin date and the end date of the five-year plan. And he said that the CFR, by virtue of the various agencies, the FBI and the CIA, sent what they called litmus testers into South Africa to actually gauge the effect of these bombs and things, and they found that it had really little effect on the way in which the primarily the voting, the white population of the country had responded to it. They felt bad about a lot of things that were happening. They felt bad about the people that had been killed. They felt bad about the sabotage going on. They felt bad about the negative propaganda that was being spread worldwide by South African newspapers, primarily the English newspapers and also the Roman Catholic Church.
Right.
But it didn't really affect, these bombs and things didn't really affect the way in which what they called, primarily it was the Afrikaner or the Afrikaans-speaking part of the community that was still intact. So yes, they pre-planned a second five-year plan, and he could actually demarcate the begin date and the end date, and during which, like a second wave, they would have these bombs and things going off, right, and people getting murdered, etc.
So a five-year plan of terrorism is basically
a five-year plan of orchestrated terrorism, originating and orchestrated out of Washington.
Right. CFR.
And he's, that's right. And he said that, again, the litmus testers reported that there wasn't really a change in the feeling in which these people, these Afrikaans-speaking people, really expressed themselves with discontent against those who were the perpetrators of the planting of bombs, etc. And then they went and they had a deep thinking, like a scrum, in terms of what is the next step, because South Africa had survived the second year plan was also economic embargoes and things like that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then they came and they actually had a commission that visited the country and spoken to people, and they found that there was another way of doing this, and they looked at the Afrikaner or the Afrikaans speaking portion of the population, and they realized that this the population, the voting population, existed primarily of the Afrikaans speaking,
mm-hmm,
and that they have a very close family tie, close family bond, and the Afrikaans speaking person,
yeah,
also
all white.
Has
most of them are white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the voters, the people that did the voting were all white, but mm-hmm, what he said was that they made this conclusion that the people that did the voting had a very close family tie, and they had a very close communities associated with their churches and their belief system. And they had a very close tie with their political party, which was the Afrikaners National Party. And he said that with this feedback going back to the Council of Foreign Relations, what they did then was they sat and they did some deep thinking, and they realized for their plan to work, they now have to cut down on the, or basically kill the Afrikaans-speaking people's trust in their government, number one. Number two, in their church. And number three, in their political party.
Okay. Yeah.
Because those three are very closely knit. The one item that actually binds those three items together is the close-knit family bonds that existed. Now, that had been a trademark of the Boers for many, many generations.
Right.
And you can also see it very closely knit in the Boer history. And he said that what they then did, they planned to undermine, first of all, the role of the father in the household because of the very strong leadership role that the father played in the house. They were going to undermine that, and they were going to undermine their belief system in their religious views. And also, they're going to break down the father image. They're going to break down the husband image. They're going to break down marriages. They're going to, and that was their target. And he said that with thinking like that, he realized, but hold on, what is he busy doing here? South Africa is virtually the only Christian country left in the world. Now, I'm saying it in the context of as it was at the time.
Yes.
South Africa is just about the only Christian country left in the world that still had a government that at least had some form of religious, Christian religious views. And that was maintained within the country. And he realized that he was busy planning and helping to plan and execute that exactly what he stood for. In other words, what he wanted for himself, he now found that he was in contradiction to what he firmly believed in. So what he did was he, at some point, he made an appointment with Jimmy Carter.
Okay.
And he said to Jimmy Carter he wanted to come and speak to him in great confidentiality. And which he did. He said he managed to get an appointment with Jimmy Carter, and he went and he spoke with Jimmy Carter, and he said to Jimmy Carter, this is what the Council of Foreign Relations are busy planning. This is what they're going to do with South Africa. This is what they're targeting to achieve. And Jimmy Carter apparently said to him, but where's your proof of that? So in any case, at the next CFR meeting, he managed to actually get proof, documentary proof of that which is being planned. And he made an appointment with Jimmy Carter again, and Jimmy Carter invited him, said to come and show me. And when he was at the point where he was exposing these documents to Jimmy Carter had the chief or the local chief of the CIA. And the guy was jailed for leaking very confidential documentation out of the CFR.
Yes.
And he was, I think, incarcerated for something like 2 or 3 years. And when he came out of jail, he decided he was going to come to South Africa in person, which he then did. And that was at the time when he spoke. But he, one of the things that he said, now I can recall, when he spoke, one of the during the question time, one of the ministers, which whom I didn't personally know, but I knew a lot about him because some of my friends were in his congregation, he stood up and he asked, his surname is Pastor Swift.
Okay.
And he in particular said, but this isn't this the aim and the purposes of the Illuminati?
Right.
And, of course, this this gentleman who came to South Africa, the American guy, said, well, he didn't want to extrapolate that across to the Illuminati, but there would be very close ties between the Council of Foreign Relations and the Illuminati.
Right.
But he didn't want to elaborate on that. Now, sure, I think there were obvious reasons why he didn't want to elaborate on that.
Let me interrupt here because, number one, Jimmy Carter was, in fact, the head of the Trilateral Commission appointed directly by the Rockefellers, which is basically a sister organization of the Council on Foreign Relations. So Jimmy Carter was one of them, an Illuminatus, okay? And he still is. Even though he wrote a book criticizing the Israelis, he still is one of them. There's no doubt about it. And Swamp Fox says, the first step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory, destroy its books, its culture, its history. Then have somebody write new books, manufacture a new culture, invent a new history. Before long, the nation will begin to forget what it is and what it was all about. Statement by Milan Kundera. Back to you.
Yes. Now, after that event, obviously I was then sensitized to the events that followed because I wanted to see whether that which we had been told was actually going to play out. And Pastor, you won't believe, we started seeing adverts in newspapers and on TV where the father role was made derogatory. Even these large, well, primarily large corporations, if they didn't totally cut out the white middle-aged man in their adverts and replaced him with a black man, they would do the opposite. They would actually use a middle-aged white man and make him play a role in an advert as if he was a dunce. In other words, a husband and wife driving on a farm road. Now, think of this. In particular, a farm road. The white man dressed like a farmer, his khaki hat on his head, in a what we call a bucky, or that you would call a pickup.
Right.
And then his wife dominating him all the way in terms of, now you must turn left here, you must turn right here.
Okay.
This is
right.
So you can see he's a total dunce. Yeah. He's made as if he's an idiot without any knowledge as to what is going
on. Right.
Dominated by his wife. Now that was one that became very popular. That type of advert driving became very popular.
Okay.
And of course, once you set that particular stage, now at this point, what we see, Pastor, is
ridiculing the role of the white patriarch.
That's right.
Yeah.
What we've seen in the past few years is, for example, a very strong emphasis in race mixing. For example, you look at the picture and you find that there is a white woman with a black man, or a young black man with a very sexy looking young black woman. A young white woman, or a young white man with a young black woman. In other words, or alternatively, people of color. Now, I call them people of color.
Mulattoes.
It's people.
Yeah, half breeds.
Yes,
half
breeds or race mixed. People.
Mulattoes is the common term in English. Mulatto.
Mulatto.
Yes.
And they propagating this image as if it is going out of fashion, Pastor. And
you should see the ads here in America. They're exactly the same.
Well, to put it like this, Pastor, it is subversive.
Yes.
It goes against everything that patriots. Live for what they stand for and what they believe in. And this is part of cultivating the thought of the upcoming generation. And that thought.
That's right. Brainwashing. Brainwashing. Yeah.
Brainwashing. And that sets the new generation on a path of, it is all acceptable to for example, date a person of a different race, a different color, etc. There's something else
liberalism.
That I also need to mention. There's something else that I also need to mention at this point. And this is my ex-wife had a friend for many years, a very close friend. And this friend of hers had befriended, in fact, she started dating a guy whom she had met at a previous occasion, and he was out of the country for some time, and he was actually providing security services to a neighboring country bordering South Africa.
Okay. Is it a white guy?
To give, A white guy.
Okay, all right.
A white man. And on the day that we were invited by this friend of my ex-wife to visit her, and we were to have a meal together and spend some time together and have a good long conversation, etc. That particular morning, the guy, it was a Saturday morning, he returned from this neighboring country. And he came to visit her as well. So we met him for the first time, and you could see that there was a lot of joy amongst the two to see one another again, etc. Uh-huh. Because she had been a loner for quite a number of years, and now this man basically walks as a surprise into her life, and he's come to visit her, etc.
Reunited.
Now,
okay.
This guy, let's call him James. I sat conversing with James, and we were talking about the type of work that I did and the type of work that he was doing. And he said to me, well, he cannot say much, but he's just arrived this morning from one of the neighboring countries.
Okay.
And he's in security, but the personal security, armed and unarmed. So he's trained in unarmed combat, etc.
Okay.
And he said to me that he was in fact training the ins and outs of the intricacies of the particular leader or the particular president of that country. And I asked him, was he training people from that country? And he said, no, they weren't being trained in terms of protecting. They were being trained in terms of customs and all the ins and outs of the, that particular person, that particular president, because he had been doing it for at least about 6 or 8 months.
Okay.
And he said that he was training people from America. And I asked him, from America, but how can it be that Americans get trained to? And he said to me, in fact, these guys were from the FBI. I said, what? I said, shall I say it? I said to him, why would the FBI want to protect Robert Mugabe?
Right, exactly.
I mean, it leaves a major question. Why would they want to protect him? He is destabilizing. He's been destabilizing the
Rhodesia. Yeah, exactly.
Well, the whole of the Southern African continent, he's been destabilizing because of the atrocities that he's been committing against some of the inhabitants of his country.
Right.
They are fleeing Rhodesia and they're coming, or Zimbabwe, and they're coming to South Africa. They're going to Mozambique. They're going to Angola. Yeah. They're going to Zambia. They're going to Namibia. And they're trying to at least escape the genocide which he has been provoking and been executing against the people of a different...
You're saying that the FBI supported Robert Mugabe in his destabilization of South Africa. Obviously, it was Rhodesia at that time. It was changed to Zimbabwe. No,
it was not that far back, Pastor. I'm talking about 2007, 2008.
Okay.
So it's that far back.
Not that far. Okay.
And in other words, it was already Zimbabwe at the time because I think Zimbabwe got its independence in the 60s. But the important thing is this. I asked him, why would the FBI find it so important for them to protect Robert Mugabe? And he said to me, David, something that you must know about politics. Politics is not driven by truth and fact. And for the sake of protecting you, the free man, it is run and driven by money, power, and secret agendas.
Yeah, Jews.
Well,
he didn't use that word.
but then after thinking about it and doing some research into various other things and reading so-called conspiracy theories, I realized something about why the FBI would be doing this, Pastor.
Okay.
Because the international Illuminati has already devised certain power blocks into similar to the United Europe, similar to the United States, similar to
subversive
cells. There's a reason that, and that is one of the reasons, also one of the reasons why people are being deprived of a national identity.
Yes.
Now you think about this. The Confederates in the United States of America are currently being targeted for everything they possibly can. Their flag is targeted. Their ideals are targeted.
Statues are being pulled over. Right, yeah.
And there's a reason for that. By robbing and stealing the people's identity, you put a power over them that they cannot identify with.
Right.
As it is in South Africa, everybody wants Zuma out, the South African president. Everybody wants him out. They've voted against him, but when it comes to the critical point that is going to be the election to get him out of power, he stays in, and nobody knows why and how.
Yeah.
So these people are kept in power for the purpose of being a puppet.
Right.
He has something like 728 cases against him. The South African president has 728 cases against him.
And
for
about
fraud,
that many wives, too, right? Doesn't he have that many wives, too?
Pastor, I think he has about six or seven wives, and each wife has
their own. Oh, only six or seven. Okay.
You won't believe this, Pastor. South Africa's population is about 1/7 that of the United States of America, given that about 40 to 50% of but 40 or 50% of the current South African population are foreigners in this country.
Right. Right.
So but the state I saw somewhere a few months ago that the South African government, the statal count of the state, the people working for the state, is more than three times greater than that of the whole of the United States.
Wow.
The South African president, his salary exceeds that of, well, Barack
president
Obama was
States.
Still,
yeah.
His so-called salary exceeds that of Barack Obama and even Trump now at the moment. But
right, right. And then how many mansions? He has a mansion for each wife, right?
He has a mansion for each wife.
Uh-huh.
And he has a swimming pool that costs something like 43 million rand.
Okay. So that's about just $4.3 million, I think.
Well, but can you imagine a swimming pool of $4.3 million? In the South African context, Pastor, that is...
Right. It's incredible. Total corruption.
He had the taxpayers to pay for it because he proclaimed that it was for a protection against fire. Now, who's going to jump in a pool when there's a fire?
Yeah, right.
But the running expenses.
Right.
One of the things I also just the other day, and I think it was about a month and a half, 2 months ago, I saw that one of the government departments, expenses just on Kentucky Fried Chicken for the past financial year was something in excess of 3.1 million.
Boy, that's a lot
South
of chicken. Really popular
chicken
down there.
Absolutely, Pastor. But
God.
But now you must remember something else. Kentucky Fried Chicken in South Africa is run by a black economic empowerment organization.
Right.
So obviously there is something that – why would the government have a KFC account?
Right. Well, to earn an income, right? Because the government is a net spoiler of income, and so they dole out these franchises in lieu of taxes. That's just
in
the
lieu
way
of taxes, and
yeah,
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot of you give me this contract and I will give you something in return situation now.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
A few years ago, when Jacob Zuma became president of South Africa, he didn't even have enough money to pay for court cases that kept him out of jail so that he could become president.
Right.
Now he has a wealth like you cannot believe. He has fixed property in Dubai. He has fixed property in, I think, two or three foreign countries. And he has a very stiff Swiss bank account.
Wow. Yeah,
Where did
a
all that
Jewish
money
Swiss account, right?
But there's another thing to this. And one must realize that prior to F.W. de Klerk, the Freemason who abdicated power in South Africa, or the white man's power, to the
Yeah.
Freemason ANC and the Freemason Nelson Mandela, or the
Yeah.
Freemason
African National
icon Nelson.
Congress. Yeah, right. Basically turning it over to communists. Yeah.
That's right. But prior to that, F.W. de Klerk orchestrated, along with, I think it was Henry Crocker from the current Council of Foreign Relations, and with a
Okay.
numerous number of other agencies as well. The
Yes.
Project Hammer, I don't know if you know about Project Hammer. If you have sometime, just do some Google research on Project Hammer South Africa, and you'll see that there were organizations involved in the shipping of something like 3,000 tons of South African gold reserves to
Right.
foreign countries, amongst which the
Yeah.
Federal Reserve in the States,
Right.
also
Yeah.
to Swiss banks. This
Right.
money, or the value of this, just imagine 3,000 tons of gold.
Yes.
What value of that would be?
Oh man.
Now,
Okay, well, let me stop you right there because people need to understand this brief history. So in other words, the CFR and the Illuminati, the International Jew, sponsored Mandela, and then once Mandela came into power, he shipped all the gold to the various Jewish banks around the world.
no, Pastor.
Okay.
Before Nelson Mandela even came to power, it was
Before
part of the
Mandela yet, or
negotiations.
even, okay.
It was done by the Afrikaner, F.W. de Klerk. Now,
Okay. Okay, and he's a
Afrikaners
Freemason.
are known, absolutely. Well, to put it like this, the whole of South Africa was run by Freemasons for many years, even before the Anglo-Boer War. Freemasons, the South African Parliament in Cape Town was built on the property and the on the front lawn, basically, of the Freemason Lodge, the Grand Lodge of the Cape of Good Hope.
Okay.
The Parliament, the Houses of Parliament, is built, erected on the front lawn of the Freemason Lodge.
Freemason Lodge.
So,
Okay. No connection whatsoever, right?
well, it stands to reason that, well, in way back in 1981, 82, one of the senior cabinet ministers at the time made this comment on in Parliament, in the South African Parliament. He said that, "What's the use of the Parliament still to exist?" Because Parliament at that time only served as a rubber stamp to confirm those decisions that are made outside of the back door.
Yeah.
And outside of the back door of Parliament, you're virtually on the front porch of the
Right. Rubber
Freemasons
stamping
Lodge.
Freemason, which is, of course, CFR and the Illuminati and Freemasonry are all intertwined. Most
All,
of those people share membership in those groups.
yes,
Yes.
absolutely.
Yeah. So this is how the CFR was involved in the deconstruction of the Boer republics and ultimately the deconstruction of the South African nation. Okay.
Absolutely
All
possible. But
right.
you say
Go
something that
ahead.
I said on a during a previous show, Pastor, is that the Freemasons, and for that reason also the Illuminati, for that reason also the International Jewry, they create the problem, but before they create this problem, they have already planned this their solution in terms of furthering their agenda. And that is exactly why South Africa has gone through this turmoil over the past. Well, that was exactly why the Anglo-Boer Wars were instigated by the Afrikaners or the Cape Dutch at the time, because the Cape Dutch, so many of the Cape Dutch were in fact Freemasons. And of course, with their Edomite background, they were agents of the Dutch East Indian Company, which was, of course, was run by the Freemasons and the Jews, the VOC. Hello?
Yeah. No, you keep going.
And of course, Edomites all act, they act to a certain, let's say, a boilerplate. In other words, where the one has a hole, the other one also has a hole, if you can understand what I'm saying. The if you do a description of one Edomite, you will find that perhaps 99% of all Edomites follow that exact same description. And that is one of those things, is this incontrollable urge for power, for money, and in most cases also sex.
Yes.
So they're driven by very deep powers. And of course, the Afrikaners, there are so many what we can call super Afrikaners that actually they show their faces across the globe. I know in Nevada and
Adelson
in California, in New York, there are so many super Afrikaners, people that rose to power within South Africa by exploiting, I don't want to say just exploiting, but by abusing their position. They exploit a particular position and they make their billions. And once they have reached the point where they couldn't give a bit about the people that they have been trampling on, as long as they still make their money, as long as they still have their esteem and their power, etc.
Right.
And this is so evident of so many of these Afrikaners, these super Afrikaners that have risen in their self-made glory. They live in these massive like castles, and they are, they deem themselves
like Zuma.
Untouchable.
right. Well, here's how the process works. It's thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So the Jews needed to promote their world power hegemony, they needed to have a new Pearl Harbor. Okay.
Correct.
So the thesis was attack the Twin Towers. Okay.
Yes.
The antithesis is blame it on Saddam Hussein and attack Saddam Hussein. Synthesis, a police state.
Absolutely.
American police state. That's how it works. And then in the meantime, they profit from all these enterprises, such as selling short on American Airlines, and I believe it was United Airlines. And the FBI was caught selling short on those two airlines, which means they had to have known to sell short. Go ahead.
But Pastor, also with Schlesinger having purchased the World Trade Center a few months before the time, taking out immense insurance on those buildings, and then having them imploded.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But it just Larry Silverstein. Silverstein, not Schlesinger.
Larry Silverstein. That's Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, although Schlesinger's not much better.
Okay. Well, Pastor, like I said, the one is a template of the other. You describe one of these Jews, and that
one is
described
a template of the other.
Right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. No doubt. And this is the way politics works all over the world, where Jews rule. They simply devise I call it the Jewish dialectic, because it's originally called the Hegelian dialectic, but the Jews have perfected it to an art, right? Hegel was just describing how history, how problems are resolved historically. That's all he was trying to say. But the Jews have perfected it into a tactic by creating both the thesis and the antithesis to obtain the desired result, namely the synthesis. It's all fabricated. It's all arranged, prearranged.
Prearranged, Boston. Mm-hmm. And I think the day before yesterday I saw a particular article on Facebook, a link on Facebook in any case, and I opened it up, and before I could finish reading it, I was caught away having to do something else or to explain something else. What it stated was somebody wanted to do or did research on the so-called deaths that occurred with this Las Vegas show.
Right.
And they couldn't find one person that was even injured in that particular event. It was all staged.
Yeah, well, that's one of the scenarios, because there's a lot of, let me put it this way. Whenever an event happens like this, immediately there's a bunch of people saying, well, nobody got hurt, nobody got injured. And then because it's taken quite a while to get the facts that actually happened. But then we have individuals who were there and who did say, and I saw the video of a man with a cell phone going around from one injured person to another and showing several dead people. So even that is part of the dialectic now, is to claim that nobody got hurt. It's all a matter of confusion, right? And the mainstream media is mum about anything except a lone shooter, whether anybody died or not. Okay.
One
lone shooter. Yeah. So that's the mainstream media version. Just like, oh, well, it had to be Lee Harvey Oswald.
That's right.
Yeah.
But
go ahead.
But there's another thing to it as well, boss. It's not just the lone shooter, but it's the gun. He's using a gun, and the gun is given the gun is being made the accursed, because they want people to be disarmed and de-armed and totally disarmed so that they can just take over without any form of resistance.
Right.
When the government says that they will protect you, that's when you need to know that you need protection from the government.
Yeah, amen, amen. Well, so in reality, the greater Jewish dialectic is you create a problem called the white patriarchy. Okay.
Yes.
And then you substitute the antithesis to the white patriarchy is the LGBT feminist liberal agenda. Okay.
Yeah.
And so obviously the aim is to dethrone the white patriarchy. And guess what? What do you think the result will be, Pastor Martins?
Chaos.
But who's going to rule after all the chaos, off the smoke
of
clears?
Course. Yeah. Yes,
the Almighty
exactly.
Jew. Yeah, right?
Edomite.
Yeah, Edomite. The Edomites,
but,
yeah. Go
but
ahead.
Pastor, there's something that the Edomites have left out of their calculation.
Right.
That is the book of Daniel chapter 2, and it is the book of Obadiah.
Okay.
Because those two books are, in fact, also I think it's Jeremiah 49 also spells it out for these Edomites.
Right.
But you see, first of all, these Edomites cannot really care what the scripture says, because
they
rewrite whatever they want.
Yeah. Well, just as the show I did this morning about the Catholic Church inventing doctrine, and brainwashing the Catholics in their day, the Jews have done the same thing to Judeo-Christians today, inventing doctrine and brainwashing people today. So we have the new beast on the block. The new beast on the block is Zog, the Zionist occupation government. Okay?
Yeah.
And we are doing everything we can to expose this beast, but this beast controls so many aspects of our society, including the Illuminati and the CFR, that it makes it virtually impossible. Now, the one thing in Martin Luther's favor was that the printing press had just been invented. So he was able to print leaflets and spread the word that way. In our case, with the new beast, it's the internet. The Jews control all of print media and Hollywood and magazines, right, and movies, but they don't control the internet. So we are the new Martin Luther exposing the Jew beast to the world. And it's just a question of time before people figure this out.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I wanted to say is that the Boers never had a voice in the Afrikaner Dom. The Afrikaners dominated the Boers and subjugated the Boers and brainwashed the Boers into believing that they are their friends. In fact, just about 2 hours ago, I publicized on or posted on Facebook about Hendrik French Verwoerd, the South African president at the time. So many people think he was the best man ever. He was the best statesman ever in South Africa. And they don't realize that he was part and parcel of the deception of the Boers.
False hope.
Taking the Boers.
Yeah, yeah.
And making the Boers believe that they were getting their Boer republics, but it's still all controlled by the Freemasons and the Afrikaners.
Phony
and
conservative.
Even to this day,
he was a phony nationalist, phony conservative, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But nonetheless, and I find that many Boers don't grasp it. They like I said to one particular person today, I said, "So you are successfully brainwashed by the Afrikaners, and just in a matter of 3 years, you will have integrated not just with the Afrikaners. If you call yourself a Boer and you still defend the Afrikaners, basically it means that in a few years' time you will be able to say exactly the same thing and covet the black man in your midst. Because if you can accept the Afrikaner and not realize what the Afrikaner's role is in the demise of the Boers and the Boer republics, then, of course, you could fall for anything.
Yes. Well, it's reminiscent here. Let's say the Boer people are the true conservatives and the Afrikaners are phony conservatives, okay?
Yes.
We have the same situation here in America where several people have stated that the Illuminati actually make greater headway in America when we have a quote-unquote Republican president. Okay.
Yeah.
Because the true conservatives think that the Republicans are conservative too, when they're just as bad as the Democrats. Even in many cases, even worse. Okay. So under the illusion of a conservative president, they undermine the republic even more, because a Democratic president would have opposition, where the people let their guard down when there's a Republican. So this is what the Afrikaners have done to the Boers.
Absolutely, absolutely,
Pastor.
Yeah. Well, is it not amazing how their ways and their dubious ways and means are replicated across the globe, and irrespective of where they go, these Jews replicate their same dubious ways and means of achieving their goal.
Yeah, the EU and the immigrant invasion. This was all orchestrated too, totally orchestrated.
And the Irish,
Irish Republican Army, right? Yeah, the conflict between the Catholics and the Protestants was engineered.
Yeah, but in particular, just after the I don't know if you know about the German children, the orphans, the German orphans that were shipped to Israel for the purpose of getting new stock blood into the Israeli or this false Israel jewry.
Because the Jews have dead blood, so they're like vampires. They need people with living blood to procreate with.
Yes.
So at least they're half alive. The and night of the living
also,
dead in Israel.
Surely you know about the Irish that were shipped as slaves to the United States,
right?
The white Irish slaves. I think there was something like 3.5 million or 4 million of those.
Yeah, and
that became slaves.
And all became Democrats. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The exploitation of refugees is incredible. Yeah, and that was instigated by the Rothschilds because that was a deliberate starvation of the Irish people in Ireland. It wasn't a potato famine. They were actually stealing the food and shipping it to Britain.
Absolutely.
It was genocide. It wasn't a famine. It was genocide.
Genocide.
So, and so the Irish only had one opportunity. I mean, many of them left voluntarily to get away from the starvation, but others were captured as slaves, as you correctly point out, and brought to America. You know, that was a long, ongoing thing. That was a long process.
Many of them thought that they were going for freedom and
they were going to hard labor is where they were going. Hard labor, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, because even though it was called indentured servitude, it had a limit. Usually, it had a limit of 7 years. It depended on the contract, you know. But very often, the labor was so difficult that they simply escaped. Those people would escape. Now, that wasn't true of blacks under chattel slavery because they didn't have a contract to release them, and they could hardly blend in with the white population if they escaped, right? So, fortunately for the Irish, many of them did finally eventually escape and became American citizens, although it was a very arduous process for them, very arduous.
Well, if something like that had to happen today, it wouldn't be possible, Pastor, because purely because of the way in which the people are being identified and labeled with travel documents and identity documents. I mean, in those days, it was uncommon for somebody to have an identity document on his person. It was something that was stuck under the mattress. Yeah.
Right, right. If they had one, their identity was the color of their skin, right, and their accent, their Irish accent. That's what their identity was. Those are different times. But now they're using our papers to try to enslave us again, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Passports, and also IDs, tax documents. Go ahead.
And social security. And,
well,
we don't have social security in South Africa.
No, but, you just pay taxes to the blacks to support the blacks. Yeah, and Jacob Zuma.
A factor which many people don't recognize as a, what one could say basically is a shackle around your legs.
Right.
Is this this fika and rika. I don't know if you have it in the States as well, fika and rika.
Right. I think I forget what it stands for here. But, it's federal. It's a form of Social Security.
I think it has to do with financial security. Or
right.
The reason what they say. Now, if you have a bank account, one of the first things that you need to do is to have yourself fikaed. Now, the FICA stands for something about financial, but it is identification clearance, something like that. So they know where you live.
Right.
And what they say is so the people can be protected against, for example, frauds, etc. But we've seen more frauds since the inception of FICA than anything or any time before. And I think the purpose of FICA, because on cellular phones, for example, you must remember that your cellular phone is associated with you as a person.
Right.
There is this Rika. Now,
and some
I was
people have
in
it attached
Italy.
To their bodies. I can't get rid of it. Yeah, absolutely.
And while being in Italy, I applied for I actually purchased a cell phone contract there for the duration of my stay, purely because of the simplicity of communications. If you need to communicate with somebody in Italy, it's far less expensive than, for example, to have your local South African number dialed all the way from Italy so that you can speak to somebody in Italy itself.
Yeah, roaming charges and all that, right. Yes.
That's right.
Okay.
Now.
So we get a local phone, and it's a lot cheaper that way, for what, 2 or 3 months, however long you stay. Yeah.
But even there, I had to have FICA documents, or rather RICA documents, to prove my that I actually stayed in the hotel where I stated that I was staying. In other words, I had to have a document that stated that I lived temporarily. And indicated on this as the day that I arrived there and the day that I was going to leave, etc. So there's a lot more to this FICA thing than meets the eye in terms of just for the government to know that phone wasn't being used for subversive purposes.
Right. So they're listening to you anyway, whether they know where you live or not, right?
They listen to you anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's all open. I mean, it's open frequency. Anybody can listen to it. You know, certainly the government's listening to your cell phone conversations and are tapping your hard line too. So, I mean, this is the police state that they are, you know, they're every single day. They're imposing more and more restrictions, more and more draconian legislation to impinge on our privacy. We don't have privacy anymore. They're just waiting for the day that you or I slip up and say something stupid on the air, which they can prosecute us for. But usually we don't exceed the bounds of civility in our pronouncements here. We just quote the Bible with regard to the fate of the Edomites. We don't make any threats, right? So,
But that's the important thing.
Yes.
Not to make threats. And fortunately, well, in South Africa, you can still make a threat against a white person, but don't make a threat against a black man.
Right.
Because that is problems.
Well, the same is here. The same is true here. If you call a black man a nigger, you will be prosecuted. But if the black person beats the hell out of you, the law will do nothing if you're white.
Yeah.
So, in other words, name calling is public punished, but actual assault is winked at if the assault is committed by a black man. That's how ridiculous. And, of course, you have the same thing in South Africa. Exactly the same thing in South Africa. All right. So, but you do have Social Security in South Africa. It's called welfare, but it only applies to blacks. Only blacks have the security of your taxpayer money. You pay the taxes, and they get the security.
Well, Boston.
Hello? You still there? Okay. Looks like we got disconnected. Oh, wow. Oh, he just called back. We have almost less than a minute to go.
Okay, I don't know what happened there. What do I want to say in South Africa?
The audio engine here. Sorry. But, Pastor, we're just about out of time. So go ahead, quickly.
Yes.
Less than a minute.
In South Africa, a black man coming here from Sudan has more political power, has more rights in South Africa than a black man that was born here and had paid these taxes for the past 45 years.
The same is true of illegal aliens who come in here and get all kinds of benefits that white people have to pay for.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to have to call it a show right here. Thanks. Great information about the Illuminati in South Africa. Thank you. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition, folks. Take care. See you next time.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.